I'm getting a traffic report from our friend Jonathan, who is watching on YouTube, the WCCO radio feed, that the light rail is hopping tonight. Every seat is busy. Every seat is filled. I shouldn't say every seat is busy on the light rail. You might get the wrong idea. Or the right idea. I know it's none of my business. I was thinking about this. Alyssa and I might move to St. Paul. Tomorrow we're going on a visit, Dan, to a new apartment building in downtown St. Paul. And we're thinking about moving over there as empty nesters.
Ooh.
And I thought, like, I could light rail it right here to work.
I mean, you could.
Wait, well, what's that?
I'm saying the Green Line isn't the most efficient city-to-city bit in the world.
I got time.
Lots of stops.
Just sit there and work.
And then, obviously, if they're going to do maintenance during a music festival, that's going to screw everything up. So,
well, we'll talk about that in the page two. Don't get ahead of yourself.
Sorry.
That's a great tease, though.
They're
always telling me I got to work a little harder on my tease.
I mean, I'm trying to help you, and you're just shutting me down. But that's fine.
Twins Ticket Tuesday, that's coming up. I don't know. Hit the thing. Let's do the lead.
Now, time to get you caught up on some of the biggest stories of the day. These are the DeRush Hour headlines.
Good evening. Our top story.
This just in.
Our top story.
We begin tonight.
We begin with the lead.
And at our top story in the lead, maybe his clearest remarks yet, indicating that he's going to run for governor again. Tim Walz, speaking with the Minnesota Star Tribune, says, if we run again, we will win. It's pretty clear, based on his comments, on his fundraising advantage, what he views as the unpopularity of the current president and the fallout likely to come from his budget bill, Tim Walz feels pretty good about running for governor again. I wanted to get some insight from one of my favorite DFL analysts, Abu Amara, to find out what he thinks about this. Abu's with us in the John Schuster Coldwell Banker Hotline. And do you agree with the governor when he says if he runs again, he will win?
Well, I think there's no question that he is stronger than he was 4 years ago. He's got a national profile. He's sitting on millions of dollars. And it's at a time when you look to the state Republican Party, they're facing some difficulties. And so I think there are a lot of reasons for him to be confident and optimistic going into 2026.
Yeah, he says that Republicans would face the best fundraiser that ever sat in this office, which is objectively true. You can't really argue about that, can you?
Yeah, I think that's objectively true, right? The fact of the matter is he's now got a national donor base, people all across the country who know him in ways that maybe they haven't known a Minnesota governor before. That isn't to say that things are perfect here or that he's done a perfect job, but it is to say that, you know, politics is about the alternative. You don't compare him to the almighty, compare him to the alternative. And Republicans haven't put up a viable alternative in the race for governor since 2006.
Today, State Senator Julia Coleman sort of coyly hinted that she might run for governor. You know, is she a kind of candidate who could provide a challenge? The negative for the governor in having two terms already and a national profile is you also have a pretty large catalog of things that you can run against.
That's right. You know, with every blessing at times, there can be a bit of a curse. And you know, sometimes politicians may overstay their welcome. I think if you're the Republicans, you've got to do two things at the same time. You've got to really make sure your base of voters show up in historic levels the way they did for Donald Trump in 2024. Although, you know, Republicans didn't win statewide, they did quite well in terms of overall turnout score. So you've got to hold that group of people at the highest levels you've ever had them. And you've really got to make inroads into the suburbs with suburban women, with younger and middle-aged men. And so if I were the Republicans, I'd be looking like, you know, someone like a Julia Coleman or a suburban woman who could make some inroads with that coalition. Because if you don't do that, it doesn't matter how good you do with the Republican base. There's just not a path to winning in November 2026.
If you're a Democrat, would you rather have Governor Tim Walz or somebody else?
Well, I think there's no question, you know, Tim Walz is still a fairly strong candidate. And yeah. So I think the Democrats, although, you know, there may be some things around the edges, the fact of the matter remains, he is by far the strongest Democrat who would run. And remember this, you know, if he were not to run, it would open up a feeding frenzy, you know, within the Democratic Party. And you would be kind of exacerbating some of the issues within the party right now, right? So you're seeing it at the national level, Democrats kind of fighting between what part of the coalition are we going to follow? Is it the far left? Is it the moderates? And I think in Minnesota right now, we're not having that conversation because we know our standard bearer to be, you know, Tim Walz. And so I just think that if he were not to run, it would open up some difficult campaigns, some difficult conversations within the party that I'm not sure folks are interested in having within the Democratic Party.
Abu Amara, very good. Thanks, Abu.
We did Abu. Thanks for coming on. We did ask Majority Leader of the State Senate, Senator Erin Murphy, what she thought about the news that Tim Walz seemed to be hinting that he was likely to run again. And she has been mentioned as someone who might be interested in running for that seat. You can listen to her conversation. You can rewind right now on the Odyssey app, or you can check it out on YouTube. If you rewind the beginning of today's live feed, you can listen to that. But I'll tell you, she didn't say much. What are you supposed to say? Like, if he doesn't run, I'm going to run? And then everyone says, oh, you're running. And you say, I'm glad he's running. And then they say, like, oh, I guess she doesn't want to run. So that's sort of the bit. Next, another topic we talked about. You go back and check out that podcast, wherever you get podcasts, with State Senator Murphy. We did talk about what the sheriff of Ramsey County said when it comes to securing the Capitol. Sheriff Bob Fletcher was on with Chad Hartman earlier today.
And so my follow-up letter in July 1st here, sort of outlined what I think we need to do to get some policy decisions made, because part of the problem is the entire legislature needs to agree on what this security might be. There are some people that would prefer to have no security for an open atmosphere, and others that are concerned they're going to limit their ability to carry their handguns in there as part of their employment. So I tried to outline for her how this should be done. And really, at a minimum, let's just agree the general public with large bags should be screened both with metal detectors. And bags can be searched manually or can be searched electronically. There's tremendous advances in metal detection. We've been using metal detection at our courthouses in Ramsey County for over 20 years. We helped install them at the state fair. Disney World passes hundreds of thousands of people. So there really isn't much inconvenience. What it leaves is leaves the public with a feeling that they're safer once they're inside that security perimeter. And it would probably take four different locations, the Capitol, the Senate building, the House of Representatives building, and then, of course, the tunnel that leads in from the southeast quadrant. But it's not really a complicated mission. It really is just, can the legislature come to a decision on what they want? And now is the time. Let's just face it. Political violence in this country is more polarized than it's ever been in decades. And there's certain actors that are willing to commit political violence and threats and intimidation. And we have to face the reality that our job is to protect the people inside that building.
Ballpark costs on this? Do you have any idea?
I don't, but, you know, we have installed in our courthouses. It's all manageable in today's world. You know, and you don't have to check all the employees. We don't require our employees to go through metal detection, even the employees at the courthouse that work for the judges. So you have a two-tiered system there.
That's Sheriff Bob Fletcher. You can listen to the whole conversation at the Chad Hartman Show podcast. One more story in the lead, and West Nile virus is in mosquitoes, in the metro, in Anoka and Carver counties. Let's go to the John Schuster Coldwell Banker Hotline, where Alex Carlson, the public affairs manager for the Metropolitan Mosquito Control District, is on with us. Alex, is this normal for a typical summer that we would find West Nile virus in mosquitoes in the metro?
Yes, it is. We've had West Nile since 2002, and this is right around the time of year we start finding samples of mosquitoes that test positive. Last year it was mid-June, so it's a little bit later than last year, but usually this disease increases as we head into later summer months, and so we're right around the time when we should start finding those positive samples.
What should we do knowing that it's here? Knowing it's normal, I don't know why this year it jumped out to me a little more. It sounded a little more concerning. But is there anything we should do as far as being aware of this?
Well, the two best things people can do are, one is don't let your guard down if you're not noticing a lot of nuisance mosquitoes, just because all it takes is one to make you sick. But the biggest thing that people can do, especially because we've had a lot of rain, is go around your yard and empty out any stagnant water, because the mosquitoes that spread West Nile virus, they tend to breed in human-made habitat, like loose tarps and clogged gutters and piles of tires and things like that. So reducing that habitat will really help everybody out.
West Nile, is this just part of the normal battery of tests you run when you capture mosquitoes? How do you find this out?
Yeah, there are certain species that are capable of carrying it. So whenever we find enough of those species, we have our vector ecologist in St. Paul do a test and see if they're carrying it or not. And all the tests so far have come back negative. So we just had our first positive last week.
Alex Carlson is with us from the Metropolitan Mosquito Control District. Because of all the rain we've been having, are mosquito counts higher than normal, or what are you seeing out there?
Yeah, I think last time I was on with you, I predicted a midsummer surge, and we're in it right now. I think this might be the peak we're seeing right now.
You nailed it.
Sometimes the science is right. So we're right now we're at the highest we've seen just district-wide in at least about 5 years since 2020. But we could be at the peak right now. We are expecting things to kind of slow down as the cattail mosquitoes start to dwindle down, because those are the ones that are peaking right now. But we could see a lot of rain in August, and that could change things. But right now we're at about the highest we've seen in a while.
When you guys make these graphics that you post on social media with the gross looking mosquito there, do you just have like a collection of freaky looking mosquito images to scare the crap out of people? Is that the idea?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's the fun part of the job, is we get to go capture mosquito larvae and live mosquitoes and ticks and all that good stuff.
Man, so fun. So fun. Well, it's good that we're up to date, and that tip about emptying the standing water is really good. So I hope people take advantage of that opportunity to at least do what we can on our yards. You guys have been out kind of taking care of larvae as much as you can in some of the ponds and all of that, but we're at the point where kind of nature does its thing, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And from here on out, we're going to be watching rain. So anytime we get an inch of rain or more, that's going to hatch another round of mosquitoes. So we'll be on it as best as we can and just hope things start to slow down.
Alex Carlson, smack a bug for him. We appreciate you being on with us today. Thanks, Alex.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
That is the D Rush Hour News Headlines. The Lead, page 2, is coming your way in just a minute. We will talk a little bit more about what in the heck is going on in St. Paul that the light rail is closed during one of the largest music festivals. This is crazy. Would you lie on a resume to get a job? And breathing during your workout, does breathing matter? We'll talk about that next. All right, D-Rush Hour News Headlines, page 2. What on earth is going on with the LRT, Metro Transit, the city of St. Paul, the fact that the LRT is going to be closed during one of the largest music festivals in the state? You know, we reported on this a little bit yesterday here on CCO Radio. It was Fred Mello in the Pioneer Press who first broke this story 5 days ago, writing, "Are you one of 90,000 music fans headed to the Minnesota Yacht Club Festival later this month? If so, be sure to skip the light rail." Now, look, light rail doesn't take you exactly to Harriet Island, but the fact that all 13 of the Green Line St. Paul stations from Raymond Avenue to Union Depot will be offline for maintenance starting July 11th and then overlapping this music festival through July 18th through the 20th, the mayor's office is saying, like, we didn't know about this. Why didn't we coordinate this better? This is ridiculous. Metro Transit is saying, well, we first announced this in April. Like, why didn't anybody make a big deal out of it? We shared the information with Visit St. Paul. It does go to the overall issue that we have so many layers of government that do a crap job of communicating with each other. Yes, we need to do maintenance. Yes, there is something happening in St. Paul all the time. But is this the best time to get that done? To me, the answer is obvious. Would you lie on a resume to get a job?
Did anybody call here asking for Vandalay Industries?
No, what happened to you?
All right, listen closely. I was at the unemployment office. And I told them I was very close to getting a job with Vandalay Industries, and I gave them your phone number. So now, when the phone rings, you have to answer, Vandalay Industries.
I'm Vandalay Industries.
Right.
Liars. New York Post reporting that nearly half of Gen Z is lying on their job applications. Perhaps it's no major surprise that they're lying on their resume. So survey data from career.io revealed that one in four job applicants have lied or provided inaccurate information when applying for jobs. And 47% of those, of the liars, are the 1990s, the Gen Zers. 39% of millennials say they're guilty of it.
This is all about beating algorithms now, though, right? Because
yes.
All of these applications are digital, and they're all through some sort of algorithm. So you're trying to get something.
You're just trying to get in.
To beat the algorithm
the buzzword
to actually
is.
Get in front of a human being. So I get it.
Only 20% of Gen Xers admit doing this, and only 9% of baby boomers. Would I tell a white lie to beat an algorithm? Well, how do you think I got this job, you know? Lied like hell on the application. Wait until you find out what I put on my college application when I run for New York City mayor, like Zoran is getting. I love this story in Minneapolis St. Paul magazine on how a garden has turned out to be a sanctuary of peace for an Excelsior woman. Great story by Barrett Thorkelson, writing about a woman by the name of Kristen Taunton, who grieved the loss of her 22-year-old son, Beau, to a fentanyl overdose in 2021. So she was thinking, like, all right, I would like to have some sort of memorial at the house. And what they did was they built the front yard, and Mom's Design Build is the company that helped with this. They turned the front yard into a memory garden. Meaningful art, meaningful planting, spots to relax and reminisce. And Kristen says, it is my favorite thing. I'm out there all the time, so it's kind of like I'm with him. Just thought that was so cool, how we can create spaces that evoke those kind of special memories and turn a really tragic situation for a family into a way that you can propel yourself forward. Pretty cool. Does breathing matter for your workout?
We want to pump you up.
I never really considered this question, but I guess influencers. And by the way, if you're getting your, well, there's only one influencer you guys should be paying attention to. And that Instagram account is at Darusha J. That's, if you need to worry about your breathing, I'll let you. You just leave it to me, people. New York Times saying that breathing is important, as one of our YouTube commenters, Benjamin, says, breathing is the single most important thing in life. Yes, yes. So when it comes to your workout, does breathing actually matter? Yeah. If you are not breathing, I'm not an exercise physiologist, but I'm here to tell you, your workout is not going well. But just automatically breathing is fine. As your exercise gets harder, we breathe harder. How is this a whole article in the New York Times? It's a whole thing. Dr. Brian Kim, a professor at UC Irvine, says your body should more or less increase or decrease your breathing in relation to your effort and need.
Oh.
Which is a very professorial way of saying, like, during aerobic workouts, so if you're, like, sweating the oldies. What's your favorite aerobic workout, Dan?
I'll get back to you on that.
Yeah. Eating a pizza? It's one of my favorites. Belly breathing can help a little. I don't know. You know what? Everybody, just work out, okay? That's enough. That is enough. Do not worry about your breathing. If that is, this is why fit people drive me nuts, you know? Like, oh, you know, maybe if I'm breathing better, I can increase my workout efficiency and then take a little creatine and then it's like, shut up. That's the D-Rush Hour News headlines. Does breathing matter? Sometimes I pick, Dad sends me these stories or I pick these stories. I'm like, oh, this would be a good tease. It's because of all those years as a morning news anchor, I can't help but pick like the dumb stories, and then they get me mad when I tell them. Texter saying one of the best workouts is heavy breathing on the phone.
Heyo.
I'm now going to share this phone number with all of you just so you can block it. It's 507. That is the D-Rush Hour News Headlines, page 2. When we come back, oh, I want to talk a little bit about the dearth of answers when it came to the flooding in Texas. We have seen this before. The cover-up is beginning. We'll talk about that in just a minute. Well, the news today in Texas just gets worse and worse. The death toll is over 110 from flooding in Kerr County. 161 are missing. So you're really looking at potentially 270 people lost.
That was the stunning thing today, was the jump in the missing number. We didn't know any kind of number that was that high. You know, locally to the Kerr County folks,
right,
it was somewhere in the 20s, and we knew the flooding was broader than that, but 160 is an eye-popping number.
It is a staggering number. And today, some officials tried to answer some questions, sort of. They were asked questions. And I do like what the governor of Texas, and he's a controversial character, Greg Abbott. Every politician is controversial. But I thought, and this was just in the last hour and a half, he said a pretty wise thing. Because we are at the point of this where people are looking for who to blame. And I sort of hate that framing, because, well, the governor said this better than I could. He says, know this, your words, who's to blame, that's the word choice of losers. And he used a football analogy. He said, look, every football team makes mistakes. The losing teams are the ones that try to point out who's to blame. The championship teams are the ones that say, don't worry, ma'am, we've got this. I do think the correct framing is to say, what went wrong and how do we make sure it doesn't happen again? Because lots went wrong here. And one of the things we learned today is that Texas is going to address the lack of emergency alert systems to warn people of flooding. The legislature there is going to meet in special session in 2 weeks. We deal with this in Minnesota in terms of tornado sirens. And there are parts of Texas, like this part, that I think a lot of us have learned a lot about over the last couple of days, that are prone to this sort of flash flooding. And what makes, you know, the governor says, look, as the state, we knew days in advance, I think it was Wednesday, that forecasters down there were saying, yeah, this one looks like a potential for a big one. And the governor says, look, we're ready with resources to respond quickly, but nobody knew it was going to be a 30-foot high tsunami wall of water, which is also fair, I think. What grinds my gears, what gets me going, is when you see this dance from elected officials that refuses to just answer simple questions. And when somebody doesn't give an answer, and granted, like today is Tuesday, this happened Friday into Saturday morning. You're not going to have an exact tick-tock minute-by-minute as to what exactly happened. But some of this stuff is pretty simple. Was the emergency alert officer awake in the overnight hours? Listen to some of the back and forth that went on with the sheriff of Kerr County, Larry Letha, today.
But prior to that, in that 3 to 4 area, my understanding is, and we're in the process of trying to put a timeline. You know, that's going to take a little bit of time. As I've told you several times, that is not my priority this time. There's three priorities. That's locating the people out there, identifying and notifying the next of kin. That is what I'm taking as my job as sheriff here to do. Okay.
With all due respect, sir, I think that the community here is asking these questions. What happened? When did it happen? Was the emergency manager awake at the time? Did they push the button to issue an emergency alert?
Sir, it's not that easy. You just push a button, okay? There's a lot more to that. And we've told you several times.
So did it happen, sir?
I can't tell you at this time. Okay.
You can't tell me if the emergency manager of the county actually issued an emergency alert.
Okay. Sheriff, who is
just give me a second.
Emergency Operations Center. Who
runs me answer the question?
The emergency operations center.
I'll come back to you. I'm going nowhere.
You got to have a better answer for that. And it's not for me. It's not for Minnesota. It's for the neighbors in that community. It's pretty simple. Like, I think over the last couple of days, a lot of us have been wondering, did they not get, like, the cell phone notification? I saw an interview yesterday with a counselor at one of the camps along the Guadalupe River, the campgrounds, and she said part of being a counselor is you turn in your phone because you're working. And so everybody doesn't have their phones with them. So, okay. You're like, well, maybe people didn't get notified because they didn't have their phone. Well, you know what? Maybe people didn't get notified because the freaking officer who was in charge of this stuff wasn't on the job. Yeah. No one woke that person up. I don't know. Answer the question. Who's in charge during an emergency? In Minnesota, you have, you know, I think we had fair questions and still have fair questions about the coordination of the search for the political assassin, where you're like, was there enough? Like, was somebody driving the bus here? Why didn't the people in North Minneapolis know that, like, he might be in your area?
Yeah.
So these are reasonable questions. This is not reporters being gotcha game. These are reasonable questions that there should be an answer. A pretty easy answer.
Or at least an ongoing process to get those answers that is clearly defined. The part that gets me is when you get the sheriff saying, you know, my priorities right now are the, you know, search and rescue and recovery and all that. I get that, sir. That is a huge priority. That's obviously priority number one, no question. We can walk and chew gum at the same time, though. And these are going to be questions that are forthcoming. And what really gets me is that when you don't start answering questions like this right away, that starts to make it look like there's something to be covered up. Somebody screwed up. Somebody wasn't where they were supposed to be. Somebody wasn't doing the job they were supposed to do. And we were trying to get our story straight before we come out and actually admit that. And that, you know, we had this discussion earlier today. That, to me, I started pinging back to the school shooting in Uvalde.
Yeah.
And all of the tap dancing that those guys did after that shooting about who knew what, when, and where, which was just ridiculous on its face, and it comes to light that they screwed that whole thing up royally. And that's why they didn't have the answers right away. Now, I'm not saying that's what's going on in Kerr County right now.
Right.
But, man, did my spidey senses start to tingle today when I started hearing some of these answers, like, I don't know. This is concerning.
I mean, there are lots of reasonable explanations why people didn't evacuate. We know they thought about a flood warning system along this river, but they decided it was too expensive. Well, we could put tornado sirens everywhere, but that also there's a cost. I get that. They didn't have early flooding monitors in that area. Could that have helped? Maybe, maybe not. The text alerts, I think that's sort of the question. I know it's not as easy as pushing a button, but it's pretty close to as easy as pushing a button.
Yeah, there's not like a committee that has to vote on it or anything.
And then there's the individual responsibility where some people who got those notifications and saw it maybe dismissed it. So all of that is part of this conversation. I do get it's early, but to me, it's not too early to be a little more forthcoming.
You hit on it earlier, I think, when you said that, you know, if your approach is let's figure out what mistakes were made and how we can do it better, instead of, well, I've got to explain to you why this person right. really shouldn't be blamed, or we shouldn't point fingers at this person, when it's protecting the institution instead of protecting the people the institution's supposed to serve, we've screwed something up. The priorities are off.
It's 5:49. Twins baseball coming your way. It is Twins Ticket Tuesday. So caller number three, as you're getting ready for Twins baseball here on CCO pregame, you know, when you hear the sound, we've locked the phones. You can't call me now. Don't even try it. But when you hear it, caller three is going to win tickets to Sunday's game against the Pirates. Cubs and Twins here today. We'll give you the temp of the team in just a minute. And I just looked, if you're an Amazon Prime person, the Chef IQ Sense wireless thermometer's on sale. Pretty big sale.
How about that?
So that's a little free service I provide. Temp of the team right now is chilly, I would say.
I mean, it's warmer than it was.
Yeah.
2 out of 3 from Tampa. That's not nothing.
I mean, it's
with a very good chance to have swept that series.
Yeah, but it was Tampa.
Tampa's not a horrible club. Well, it's not like the Rockies or White Sox we're talking about
but
here.
But now they're facing the NL Central leading Cubs.
This will be a better test.
Had a share of first place since April 4th. They just the Cubs just went 5-1 at home. I'm a little nervous. Am I being overly harsh with my temperature?
No, not. I mean, given as poorly as the Twins played in the month of June, no, you're not being overly harsh.
But I'm a little nervous.
I'm trying to provide you with some reason for optimism.
All right.
But had a good series over the weekend. You've got some momentum. Byron Buxton is playing out of his mind. He's an all-star. He's going to be in the home run derby.
So fun.
A lot of good news around this team.
And it's going to be super fun at the ballpark.
It's going to be a beautiful night tonight.
Beautiful night. Go make some noise and irritate those Chicago fans.
There you go.
We can't let the Cubs have a home field.
By the way, if you're looking into the weekend, yeah. The Pirates come into town after the Cubs. And if I'm calculating it correctly, Paul Skeens is probably going to pitch one of those games for the Pirates, maybe even Friday night. Don't quote me on that. I'm not sure. But I think you're going to get a chance to see what may be the best young pitcher in all of baseball.
All right. Weird deal on TV tonight, too.
Four-man booth.
No play-by-play guy.
Including Pablo Lopez. That'll be fun.
I love Pablo.
Pablo's great.
He's verbose, though.
He does like to talk, yeah.
I mean, that's why I like the guy. We have that in common. Have a great night. Talk to you tomorrow. Go Twins!